Welcome, investors, to the Absolute Return Podcast, your source for stock market analysis, global macro musings, and hedge fund investment strategies. Your hosts, Julian Klimochko and Michael Kesslering, aim to bring you the knowledge and analysis you need to become a more intelligent and wealthier investor. This episode is brought to you by Accelerate Financial Technologies. Accelerate, because performance matters. Find out more at accelerateshares.com.
Welcome, ladies and gents, to episode 52 of the Absolute Return Podcast. I'm your host, Julian Klimochko.
And I'm Mike Kesslering.
Today is February 7th, 2020. A few interesting topics to chat about this week, and it would not be complete if we didn't discuss what's going on with Tesla, which is just crazy, insane. Its stock shifted into ludicrous mode, and it hit nearly $1,000 per share this week, and its market cap at one point was about $160 billion. We're going to chat about what's the driving force behind this share rally. In M&A news, Intercontinental Exchange made a takeover offer for eBay. Why did the market hate this deal? Spotify bought podcast company The Ringer. What's the strategic rationale behind this podcast acquisition? And lastly, we're going to chat a bit about value investing. That's right, value stocks staged a brief face-ripping rally this week. Is a new cycle of outperformance of value stocks set to begin? Shares in the electric car maker Tesla, or Tesla as Elon Musk would call it, they've more than tripled since September as market participants have just become enamored with the stock. I was in client meetings earlier this week, and that was pretty much how every meeting started. Like, what do you think about Tesla stock? It's crazy. Some people are thinking it's a bubble here compared to the infamous rise in the late 90s of tech stocks such as Yahoo and Cisco. These went up very quickly, exponentially, which is really what Tesla is going through right now. Back in the late 90s, Yahoo and Cisco hit the 2,000% appreciation mark, actually much faster than Tesla. So this situation certainly is not unprecedented in terms of just wild price action. The stock, as I indicated, was sub 200. In the second half of 2019 and peaked at $968 and change, and still remains well above $700 this week, certainly well above Elon's 420 takeover offer that was a year or two ago. Now, there are a number of theories floating out there to explain the price action because it was really mysterious. This big exponential face-ripping rally came out of nowhere. Year to date, the stock has just gone nuts. So there's really four potential causes of the share rally. Number one is there's been a ton of option buying, call options. And what this does is it sets up the market makers such that they need to go out and buy the underlying stock. If they're selling call options, they need to go and buy the stock. So this is known as being short gamma, which is a technical term on the options desk. But effectively, it just creates a feedback loop of more buying, and it just really amplifies the respective stock moves. So as the share price rises and market participants or speculators are net buyers of call options, and the option market maker needs to go out into the stock market and buy more stock just to be fully hedged up on that trade. A second reason could be covering by short sellers. Now, Tesla is a heavily shorted stock, which we've touched on in the past. There's $14 billion in short interest against Tesla. Now, this makes it the most shorted company on the U.S. Stock market. Been a number of hedge funds that have been burned on this one. The Financial Times talked about a European hedge fund, Odi, getting burned on their Tesla short. Greenlight was obviously short for a number of years, but I believe they structured that just being long put options, so not necessarily hurting as bad as one who would be short the stock. But nonetheless, it appears that short covering isn't the primary consideration here, because short interest has fallen pretty dramatically from 25% down to 13% today. And combating that is the notion of the outstanding convertible bond. So as the convertible bonds rally, convertible bond arbitragers, they would actually go and short more stock just to fully hedge up their position to have a correct delta hedge, especially when the converts are way in the money, as I'm sure there are here. So you have an increasing short selling on the convert side, and that is perhaps, you know, meeting what's going on the fundamental shorting side. A third reason, which I think is one of the main reasons for this tremendous stock rally, is just outright retail speculators going long Tesla shares. For example, on Monday, 12,000 Robinhood accounts bought stock in the company for the first time. Now, Robinhood is the notorious free stock trading app favored by millennials. And that could be a good indication of unsophisticated investors buying the stock. In terms of trading volume, the trading volume was just off the charts for Tesla stock. Its volume over this week was triple that of Apple, but its market cap is only 1/10 the size of Apple's, so some pretty significant volumes, a lot of which is just retail speculators going long the stock. The funny thing is, if you go into Google this week and type in the phrase, should I, and then the first thing that Google will suggest is, should I buy Tesla stock? Which is just kind of indicative of the current zeitgeist and the attitude in the market regarding what's going on with Tesla. It's really top of mind with everyone. Perhaps the last potential cause of the share rally, some people point to fundamentals. For example, they did have a profitable Q4 in terms of, you know, whether those were robust profits. That certainly is debatable. They did get their new China factory up and running. I believe they're producing Model 3 cars out of there. So certainly some positive news coming out. However, on the other side, and short sellers would certainly be the first to tell you this, they've never actually been profitable on an annual basis. You look at the comparable valuations of other auto companies, GM, Ford, they're a small fraction of where Tesla trades. And on a fundamental cash flow profitability basis, Tesla, their net loss has averaged more than $1 billion a year for the past 5 years. So it's kind of hard to justify the company's market value increasing by 3 to 4-fold over the past 4 to 5 months. So it's really just been an insane rally here. Luckily, we're not short the stock, but unfortunately not long the stock. In any event, those longs certainly are, you know, having a cold one this weekend, having a great celebration. And anyone who has been long certainly has been enjoying the ride. What are your thoughts on this crazy price action behind Tesla stock?
Yeah, I think one thing that Tesla has been really good at is really controlling the narrative around the fact that they're a growth stock. Now, to fight back a little against that is that they delivered 112,000 vehicles in Q4 this year, which put them slightly above the bottom of their annual delivery range target, which was from 360,000 to 400. So they're just above the bottom of that range. But then as well, if you look at past deliveries, their revenue in Q4 only grew 1% year over year. So this really isn't this massive growth company. And the reason why you have such a large increase in deliveries, but not and also an increase in revenue is because they're really significantly lowering their average selling price, their ASPs. And so
that's through the Model 3, right? They're ramping up Model 3 sales, and
yes.
Model 3 is by far their lowest priced automobile.
Yes. And so when you're looking at a business, I mean, one of the fundamental factors that you'd be looking at is their pricing power over time. And they are constantly reducing the price. Now, this is to increase their volume, but I guess it begs the question of whether that would be a great investment over the long term. You know, to get away from the fundamentals as well, just looking at the volume, as you had mentioned, Julian, and putting it into context, is that from Monday to Thursday's close, there was 196 million shares traded, which is 138% of their free float.
Now, and those are expensive shares as well.
Absolutely, at very high prices. Yeah. ETFs at very high prices. And so the free float is just the shares outstanding that are not held by insiders. But to put that into context, last week Amazon released their earnings surprise, which we discussed a little bit. But during the week, they traded about 7% of their float. So these are just massive numbers and massive volume. And so it really implies that they've turned over their entire shareholder base throughout the week. As well, one other note on the volume is that a significant portion of their volume has been from dark pools, and that has been increasing as a proportion of their overall volume, which does lead credence into the comment that you just made about Robinhood accounts, as Robinhood does sell their order flow to dark pools. And so that does lead a little bit of credence into the fact that this is really just being pumped to retail investors.
Right. So you're saying much of the volume potentially went to unsophisticated retail speculators.
Absolutely.
Right. And that makes sense from the perspective, as we indicated previously, that Tesla is a story stock. It's effectively, you know, the definition of a story stock, where the price action of the shares really is completely divorced from the underlying fundamentals of the business. As you indicated, sales up, 1 to 2% year over year. So certainly not a growth stock, but certainly a glamour stock that definitely is top of mind, gets front page news. The other thing that we should discuss is the notion of the popularity, increasing popularity of ESG investing. Everyone would certainly point to Tesla in terms of ESG, just given no use of fossil fuels in terms of fueling their automobiles, given that they are electric. So certainly a big favorite of ESG, and that style of investing is getting a lot of flows, and they're basically forced buyers here. Another really interesting aspect in this whole rigmarole is Elon Musk's compensation scheme, where the higher the stock price goes, the more he's compensated to, I believe, in the tens of billions of dollars, the higher the stock goes. And I believe a large portion of this compensation gets issued to him if the shares close above $150 billion in market cap, which it's right around that level. Now, some people would say, well, it incentivizes him to get the share price up, which obviously other owners of the stock would appreciate. However, conversely, a skeptic like myself would be like, well, this also incentivizes him to promote the stock and potentially manipulate the stock. So that's kind of another potential thing to consider. So just crazy action, but something that's even crazier, and I know a lot of retail speculators got heavy into the options market on this one, and there were certainly some home runs. For example, the 1,000 strike option rose from 2 cents to nearly $2 quite quickly. So that's pretty much almost a 10,000% gain over a short period of time. So if you're looking for a gamble, Tesla options are certainly where the action is. It's just mind-blowing, because more Tesla calls traded this week than S&P 500 calls. So on the overall index, there's more Tesla stock option speculators out there than just the general stock market.
When also with the options, I think I did see as well for options with a strike price of 1500, so, you know, another double, they were trading for, I think, around the $3 range. So, I mean, as well, selling those options could be very profitable as well.
And I'll reiterate what I've stated before in terms of story stocks. We never like being involved in these, long or short, because in my opinion, it's really just playing with fire. Nonetheless, if you're long here, congrats, you know, celebrate a bit. Perhaps you're taking some off the table. And if you're short, you know, that's it's real tough to go through one of these squeezes, and definitely painful. Nonetheless, it makes for a great story, and I'm sure we'll be chatting about it in the future as well. There was a head-scratcher of an M&A offer this week with the Intercontinental Exchange, which owns the New York Stock Exchange and a few other financial product exchanges. They actually announced that they made a takeover approach for e-commerce company eBay. Now, this acquisition would exceed $30 billion. This compares versus ICE's market cap, that's Intercontinental Exchange. They are worth $50 billion. So this is really perhaps a bet the company deal, where it's a significant size. And this not only is huge, but it represents a huge departure from ICE's focus on financial markets. Obviously, they started out in derivatives. They went to buy the New York Stock Exchange. So they're into derivatives, commodities, stocks, futures, etc. To go and buy a consumer goods exchange was certainly causing many on the street to scratch their heads, and many thought it was very, very odd. Some background on Intercontinental Exchange. So ICE was founded in 2000, and it's really turned into a global exchange powerhouse, really through M&A. They've had a substantial consolidation strategy that has driven their growth. They bought other exchanges aside from the New York Stock Exchange, including London-based International Petroleum Exchange in 2001. They bought the Chicago Stock Exchange in 2018, and that's really ICE's strategy, is to consolidate, to continue to do these deals, which have paid off tremendously for shareholders. Their stock has done incredibly well, but my thesis on ICE was like, it was similar to a shark, such that, sharks, if they don't stop, if they don't keep moving, then, they die. It's same thing with ICE. If it can no longer buy companies, then they won't be able to grow. They won't be able to consolidate, make these cost cuts, harvest those synergies, and get its share price moving. And on the financial product side, I believe they're at the point where they can no longer buy any financial product exchanges, just given antitrust regulations. Not just that, but the sovereign country issues. If they try going to London, try going to Australia or even Canada and buying up those exchanges, then the government pretty much tells them to go pound sand. So it's really a head scratcher of a potential acquisition, in my opinion, going from a financial products exchange to a consumer products exchange. And the market probably thought something similar, at least some shareholders. What are your thoughts on this interesting, to say the least, potential transaction?
Certainly very interesting. And I will say that initially I was somewhat open-minded to the idea that there could be some synergies with regards to ICE and eBay and their respective platforms, that perhaps there was some technological overlap, that they would be able to realize some value creation. But following these really initial conversations with investors, ICE saying that they're no longer looking at these strategic opportunities with eBay, it really makes it easier to believe your way of thinking about it is that this is really just like a stretch for growth outside of their core area of expertise. If they had a lot of conviction with the idea of the value creation that they could have with this deal, a short-term 10% share price decline really wouldn't cause them to walk away. Or at the very least, when they were interacting with investors, they would present an idea of the transaction and how this would work operationally that may be able to bring some of their investor base on board. But it really just speaks to their conviction. And, I guess it really is a pretty good example of how investors typically are not very friendly to a really outside the box thinking. And, this is kind of for good reason, as that's a very high risk. And so, which also, when you mentioned this is a bet the company moment, you need to have a lot of conviction with regards to that bet the company moment. And if a 10% decline completely sways your thinking, then you likely, as a management team, didn't have a lot of conviction there. But one other thing that I was curious about is, do you think that they leaked this potential deal on purpose?
Yeah, I just wanted to summarize for investors what exactly happened or what I think happened. So ICE had this potential eBay deal that they're talking to eBay. They leaked it to the press. Wall Street Journal published it because they wanted to see what their shareholders would think, i.e. how would our stock react? Stock did very poorly. ICE's stock dropped almost 8%. eBay obviously rallied on takeover speculation, up 9%. Then pretty much the day after their stock got hit, they backpedaled pretty much the fastest I've ever seen, dropped the takeover proposal and said, we're not going to pursue this deal anyway. They also made the excuse saying, blamed it on the other side, saying eBay had not engaged in a meaningful way. And as a result, It was not in negotiations regarding the sale of all or part of eBay. Now, after that happened, the share prices partially reverted, but still, some ICE shareholders are probably somewhat, walking on eggshells here, kind of nervous. What are they going to do next? And you got to think, if they're no longer able to execute their consolidation strategy in their wheelhouse, which is, financial product exchanges, derivatives, stocks, etc., what's next? Cryptocurrency? Going to buy Coinbase? Shoes? They could buy StockX or perhaps one of these mini private share exchanges. There's lots of potential, I call them, alternative assets or just, odd financial exchanges, because one thing that they do want to harvest as well is the data. ICE is big into harvesting and selling data to financial professionals, so that could be another play, but interesting M&A strategy here, but good for them in listening to their shareholders and walking from this deal relatively quickly. Streaming company Spotify announced the acquisition of Bill Simmons' podcast company, The Ringer, which has more than 30 podcasts in its network. This company, The Ringer, is founded just in 2016, so around for less than 4 years. Some of their podcasts range from an NBA chat show to one oddly devoted to rewatching of old movies. Nonetheless, this continues Spotify's strategy to really capitalize on the massive growth in podcasts. They're trying to pivot away a bit from streaming music. They're expanding their podcast offering. They actually acquired 3 podcast companies last year, including Gimlet Media, Anchor. They acquired those for a total value of $340 million, and Parcast, which they acquired for about $55 million, and who knows, maybe they'd want to buy the Absolute Return podcast. I mean, we'd consider selling for $55 million perhaps, wouldn't we? You never know. But no outstanding offer, unfortunately, but Spotify, if you're looking for the most exciting and perhaps most insightful stock market and financial podcast out there, perhaps we could talk about a deal on the Absolute Return podcast. But nonetheless, a few stats on the podcast industry here. Now, there's close to 1 million podcasts out there right now, 850,000. Podcast, of which there are 30 million episodes. A lot of choice out there. I know what perhaps is number one, or maybe in the top 10. 51% of Americans have listened to a podcast. 90 million listened in the last month. 62 million in the last week. And really just growing like a weed. One of the big growth industries. Podcasting advertising expected to generate more than $860 million in revenue this year. And $1 billion by 2021. Substantial growth there. And I think an interesting analog is the Chinese market. They're way ahead of North America in terms of monetizing podcasts. There's actually a different model there where I believe podcast listeners subscribe and pay in the billions of dollars per year to get their podcast instead of relying on the advertising revenue. And if we look just compared to total digital advertising in the US, that brought in north of $100 billion. So substantial growth potential for podcast advertising. And that's perhaps, some of the main reasons why Spotify's trying to grow in the podcast space. Terms of this Ringer deal were not disclosed, but if we talk about strategic rationale, Spotify seems to indicate they think they're buying the next ESPN. In terms of sports coverage. What are your thoughts on the strategic rationale on this deal?
Yeah, I think the strategic rationale really just comes down to the economics of the streaming business model. Is right now, Spotify's gross margin is in the 25% range, implying that they are giving out 75 cents on every dollar to the artists of revenue that they're able to get. Whereas for Netflix, for example, they're looking at about 62 cents on every dollar that goes out. So it's fundamentally a little bit worse than streaming video. But really, the streaming business is just very difficult. And so what Spotify's core belief is, they don't just want to be streaming music. They want to be streaming all sorts of audio. That's their main focus. And so it seems to be their belief that there's a lot more flexibility with podcasts when negotiating royalties. royalties with content creators. And so when you look at, you know, where do they go from here after they integrate the Ringer into their suite of content, is it really wouldn't be surprising to see Spotify make them exclusive to their own platform. Now, they haven't really done this with Gimlet Media, which, as you had mentioned, they had purchased last year. But another option that would be kind of keeping it more of an open system would be to take big name podcasts such as the Bill Simmons podcast, which is one of the most successful podcasts of all time, and have that open to all platforms, where within that podcast they would provide exposure for all their new exclusive podcasts, which they would just have on the Spotify platform, which is kind of the same way that the New York Times has used the Daily. Mm-hmm. Now, that they've grown the Daily to become a very successful podcast, but really it just highlights all the journalistic capabilities of the New York Times.
Right. So they already have all that content. They just created a new medium to share it with consumers.
Absolutely. And so really just bringing people into your platform. The one other thing that I'd like to point out is that The Ringer did actually have their I think it was about 60 or 70% of their employees unionized over last summer. So that'll be something interesting to follow as the integration of The Ringer goes into Spotify. But one other aspect that, in terms of, you know, what type of revenue The Ringer is bringing in, it was estimated that in 2018 that they brought in about $15 million for their podcast revenue. And if it's, we discussed the Barstool deal with Penn last week, if it's anything like that revenue stream, it's growing at a very high rate, effectively doubling year over year. So that number is likely a lot higher today.
One thing I wanted to touch on, it's an interesting dynamic, your comment on margins, specifically in the streaming business being very low. And you got to think of a podcast as a very high margin opportunity. You look at someone like Joe Rogan, who's got the most successful podcast of all time, and he's minting millions of dollars off each episode, likely. And, you know, these things don't cost a lot, certainly a lot cheaper than making, you know, professional sounding quality music and putting an album out there. I know from our own experience, the Absolute Return podcast, of course, a 5-star rated podcast. I got to be honest with you, it's not the most expensive thing to put together, but certainly of the highest quality, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. I think I heard that a high-quality podcast was about $10,000 per episode to produce, which is substantially higher than this fair podcast.
Yeah, but perhaps that lends credence to our skill behind the podcast. In any event, congrats to Bill Simmons on this big win here. Clearly, even though terms were not disclosed, it looks like they're getting a big paycheck on this one. After being beaten down for many, many years, value stocks this week staged a brief face-ripping rally on Wednesday, with some value funds rallying by over 4% on the day. Value stocks had outperformed glamour stocks by a substantial margin over many decades. This is what's known as the value factor, basically cheap or undervalued securities outperform expensive or stocks with high multiples on book value, earnings, EBITDA, cash flow, whatever it is. Cheap tends to outperform expensive. However, the last decade, this has reversed. Been a very challenging decade for cheap stocks, and you've had growth or glamour stocks really just crush it. Now, it makes a question. Does this green shoot this week signify a potential turnaround of the value factor? I know many value investors have been waiting many, many years for it to turn, and the divergence between value and growth or glamour has just been getting wider and wider. Some details on Wednesday's move. Value's return on the day represented more than 2 standard deviation daily move relative to growth and the broader market, and this goes back about 25 years. For example, a trade of being long value, short momentum was up nearly 8% on the day. So not only did you have the outperformance of value, but you had momentum stocks really going the other way. That being said, it's only one data point. Really, value had been getting kicked in the teeth year to date, has underperformed growth on 83% of the days. Certainly been a very rough ride. What are your thoughts? Is this going to be a turnaround for value investing, or is it just some fake news?
No, this is strictly my own opinion, but I really do think that this is setting the table for a very good run for the value factor. And I mean, it's something, I mean, I know a couple of months ago you had tweeted out pounding the table on the value factor moving forward, especially small cap value, as that's being really beaten down even more than large cap value. But moving forward, I mean, in terms of an investment thesis, I am always weary of mean reversion, but the thing about mean reversion is when it is at extremes, that is when mean reversion can work as a strategy. And what we're seeing is just such a large extreme of value companies just being completely killed compared to growth. And I do believe that moving forward over the next 5 years, that this is a really good setup for the value factor.
Yeah, it's an interesting point comparing value or valuations of value stocks versus growth stocks. And I believe the divergence now exceeds that of the tech bubble, which previously to today or this year had been the most extreme divergence of all time. And what happened after 2000, after the tech bubble burst, you had incredible outperformance from value stocks, I believe, compounding 15% per annum of outperformance over many years, perhaps 5 to 10 years. So certainly I think the setup is there for value outperformance, but it's not gonna be next week, next month, or next quarter. This is a long-term play, as you indicated. And if you're looking for a value fund, like our Accelerate Private Equity Alpha Fund is perhaps the most value of them all, isn't it? I think our average multiple in the portfolio is less than 5x EBITDA versus S&P 500 at rough, 13 times. So it's tough to find a cheaper stock portfolio than Alpha, which obviously trades on the Toronto Stock Exchange. If you are interested in taking a look at interesting way of playing this potential rally in value stocks on a go-forward basis. 2010s were the decade of growth stocks, glamour stocks, and maybe the 2020s will signify the re-emergence of value stocks. It'll be an exciting time to watch, and let's keep our fingers crossed. And that's it, folks, for episode 52 of the Absolute Return Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please check out more episodes at absolutereturnpodcast.com. I implore you to follow us on Twitter. Your handle is?
M_Kessler.
And mine, you can find me on Twitter as the People's Hedge Fund Manager. Recently changed my Twitter handle to at Julian Klimochko. That's KLYMOCHKO. That's it for us. Wish you the best of trading, speculating, investing, short selling if you're into that, and we'll chat with you soon. Cheers.
Thanks for tuning in to the Absolute Return Podcast. This episode was brought to you by Accelerate Financial Technologies. Accelerate, because performance matters. Find out more at accelerateshares.com. The views expressed in this podcast are the personal views of the participants and do not reflect the views of Accelerate. No aspect of this podcast constitutes investment, legal, or tax advice. Opinions expressed in this podcast should not be viewed as a recommendation or solicitation of an offer to buy or sell any securities or investment strategies. The information and opinions in this podcast are based on current market conditions and may fluctuate and change in the future. No representation or warranty, expressed or implied, is made on behalf of Accelerate as to the accuracy or completeness of the information contained in this podcast. Accelerate does not accept any liability for any direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage suffered by any person as a result of relying on all or any part of this podcast, and any liability is expressly disclaimed.